And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And we have a real special edition today of Breakthrough Thinking because obviously after the tragedy on Friday in Connecticut, personally I had something going on with a good friend of mine. Their son unfortunately committed suicide last week. I was at the funeral today. Great kid. We want to honor him. So we have a great panel today to talk about teen suicide because it is rampant. It seems to be epidemic, and we have a great panel to discuss this. And if we can just help one child, one teen, this is well worth it. We may do this on a regular basis because I think it's that important. We got to protect the kids. And of course, with adults, too, you know, that they have issues and they can be helped as well. So today we have in studio Dr. Sharon, and of course that's Dr. Sharon Van Lentz. Sharon, how are you? I should say
I'm
Dr.
Good.
Sharon.
Oh, I'm good.
In fact, you need the microphone. There
I
we
do.
Go.
Okay, there
and
we go.
And of course, your show is every third month. Every third month.
Tuesday.
Every third Tuesday from 2 to 3.
There we go.
And of course, you're a great psychologist, and we're really glad you're here. And also in studio, this sounds like a sporting event, is someone that's going to have a radio show right here on KXXT 1010. Steve Fierstein, how are you? Steve, yeah. Josh Fierstein. I was looking at Steve and calling you Steve, and I was like, okay. Anyway, you know what I mean.
Well, Dave.
Josh, how are you?
You know what? Finally, excited to be on the program today. I really think, looking around the room here, that we're going to have a phenomenal discussion, and I think by the end of this, we're really going to help somebody.
And I will remember it's Josh and not Steve.
Right.
Sorry about that. Anyway, Josh Fierstein, and of course, you're a TV evangelist, and you're going to have that radio show starting in January right here in 1010.
January
what time?
7th.
5:15 to 5:45, I believe.
January 7th, while you're driving home, 5:15 to 5:45 here on KXXT.
God, you have a good voice. I am so jealous. Okay, and now, someone I've known a long time. I really admire this guy. He's a national syndicated radio talk show host, a great talk show host. I've told him many times, and I just think he has a heart to help people. Steve Sanchez, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to be here, Dave.
It's so nice to see you. Usually I see you out there. And
out there show prepping.
Yeah, or sometimes at lunch, but we won't talk about that.
Yeah,
so
sure.
Anyway, so this is very important, teen suicide. And Dr. Sharon, let's start with you, and then we'll all join in. Whatever you have to say, remember our goal is to help at least one person, and as well as parents to recognize signs. Sometimes parents may not get involved enough, and you never want to feel guilty as a parent, like, oh, I should have done this, because sometimes it would be too late. Dr. Sharon.
Hi. Well, I just wanted to introduce to the listeners who haven't listened before that I've been in the field for 28 years, and I've seen a lot of depressed people and families in a lot of situations where I've had people say, you know, I'm suicidal. And fortunately, I've never had a teen suicide, but we want to talk a little bit about some of the factors that are involved in teens who are considering taking their life. And one of the, first of all, they'll say things like, if you weren't my friend, I think I'd like to die, or I'd like to do myself in, or if it weren't for this, I wouldn't be here, and those kinds of things. And you need to take those things seriously. Also, typically, there are several gestures before completed suicide, and girls are more likely to be the ones to have the most gestures. Males are 4 times more likely to actually complete the suicide.
Wow.
So those are some interesting things to start off with.
Now, when you say gestures, what do you mean by that?
Well, it could be an overdose attempt. It could be slitting wrists. And I'm not talking about just cutting. I have like 4 or 5 teenagers right now, all girls, that are cutters. And they're cutting their wrists or their ankles or sometimes their thighs so they can hide it. Mm. And that's, you know, they do that when they're depressed, but it's more like they want to feel something. So then they have, because they're so cut off from their feelings, that they actually have to watch themselves bleed to know that they're alive.
Oh, that is just tragic. Yeah. Josh or Steve, have you seen any of those type of behaviors, Josh?
Yeah, well, you know, one thing that I find really interesting, Dave, is that looking at this particular epidemic amongst teens, first of all, let's be extremely clear about this, is this is not just a behavior that goes on within one particular sect of society. In fact, looking over the last couple of years, we look at a lot of the people that have overdosed. Even the recent tragedy, the tragic death of Heath Ledger. And just looking at this particular situation, you know, a lot of people think that the reason for somebody making that such a drastic decision as to take their own life is, you know, a lot of people think that the problem or the answer to their problems, rather, is that they're, you know, if they had more money, if they had more success, you know, et cetera. So we find a lot of like Wall Street types and a lot of people that have committed suicide based upon the success factor. Now, I think it's interesting to look at Heath Ledger. And here is a guy that has had all of the sex, money, drugs, rock. And I mean, like he had the lifestyle. I mean, a good looking guy, much better looking than myself. And I mean, here was a guy that was so depressed and not happy with life because he had not found the fulfillment that he was looking for. And even in his suicide note, he, you know, wrote particularly about not feeling as though he was fulfilled or that he had any hope, and that the pain and that the gaping hole and wound inside of him was so big that he had tried to medicate it with alcohol. He had tried to take, you know, a different prescription and I believe non-prescription drugs. And I'm definitely not, you know, against that. But I think that the deeper issue is people feeling, and this is coming from a kid that at 14 years of age was sitting on my bed with a .308 Winchester rifle in my hand, and I had grown up, I was hurt, I stuttered, wasn't able to speak, went to speech therapy, kids made fun of me, threw rocks at me, I was bullied, I was made fun of, I was a little bit on the chubbier side, and so, you know, there was all this teasing, and I felt so secluded that I came to a point to where I felt like I was almost hopeless. And I think that a lot of people that reach this point are in such emotional trauma and such pain because they really feel as though they don't have any hope. And my hope is and desire is that by the end of this hour, we're really, if there's somebody listening right now, I want you to know that if you've come to that place in your life, is that there's always a tomorrow. And there's some of the people that have taken their lives, the brightest future was still ahead of them, but they made a decision too early because they were basing a decision based upon the current situation. And that's the one thing that we can all say about our lives is situations change.
Yeah, there's no question. I want to hear from Steve for a second, but I want to get back to your story and look at what you were thinking about, because I think people might, so there might be some listeners out there that could relate and you could help people. And Steve, I mean, this whole teen suicide, I mean, you're a parent. I mean, it's just heartbreaking I can't even imagine something like that.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question about it, and I'm not going to pretend that I have the answers. There's no doubt it's an epidemic, not just in young people, but just across the board. We're seeing that more and more. But, you know, I'm a Christian talk radio host,
yeah.
And you know, KXXT is a Christian radio network. And I believe, and this is my opinion, that when God was taken out of schools, the suicide rate has tripled since 1963. I believe that it has allowed us to not have freedoms to discuss situations with our teachers when they used to be trusted counsel, to discuss our faith, to pray. And I believe that many times there's many students that have been brought up in the church or a church and maybe don't feel comfortable talking to their pastor. They obviously can't talk to their parents, but maybe talking to a coach or their history teacher and that history teacher being able to pray with them, talk to them that there is a creator that has a purpose and a destiny for their lives, I think that would be a big help. I'm not saying that's the only help, but in my belief system, I believe fundamentally that is the help. I believe that is a big problem. We're seeing that more and more. I mean, think about it. If prior to 1963, the suicide rate was minute and it's tripled, what else? I mean, we've seen society go into depravity. We've seen that everybody has to have the latest and greatest. We see that today kids are being bullied at nightmare proportions. We've seen that on YouTube. We've seen these things happen. Schools are limited in the way they can handle things these days because they're afraid to be sued. And these kids are tormented. You know, maybe a family can't afford the latest designer jeans. And we're in a society that we're so visual that it seems like we have to have everything, the best of everything. And if we aren't in that genre, maybe we don't measure up. And there's issues at home. I mean, we see these issues at home, you know, and the kids go to school, they act out. There's just no great answer. We can sit and we can dissect and formulate opinion, but the reality is we just don't know. We can gather information and we can make our best effort in terms of making a decision or coming to a conclusion as to why suicide. But at the end of the day, we just really don't know. But I have to go back and I have to look at history and say, if we were here and now we're here, there's probably a good reason that morality, faith, and a lack thereof probably plays a part in it.
You know, it makes sense. I didn't realize it tripled since 63. And I agree totally with you that everyone wants to keep up with what they used to call the Jones or the neighbors. You know, they want the latest and greatest thing. And when they place that to their identity and they don't get it, then they feel worthless versus working inside, transforming yourself, becoming a better person, evolving to your full potential, having a purpose, a meaning. Josh, I know you talked about that. And mm-hmm. And Dr. Sharon, I mean, what's your take on this? Are those some of the reasons that you know of that could lend itself to a higher teen suicide rate these days?
Well, definitely. Feelings of worthlessness, self-hate, guilt, criticism, failure, rejection by peers, all of those, you know, reasons are part of the picture of a teen suicide. Some of the risk factors, especially for adolescent females, are repeating statements of not wanting to live, demonstrating at-risk behavior, such as substance abuse or promiscuity, a passive attitude about life, such as, I don't care if I live or die. Verbalizing a wish to escape intolerable situations, and sometimes they feel like that's their parents. And sometimes they feel that they have so much homework that they can't possibly complete it all, and they actually have suicidal thoughts about because they have too much homework, which is just beyond me how the schools can stress kids to that point. But I have several of them right now that, you know, have
homework.
Said that. Too much homework. They can't live up to the expectations of their parents.
Well, that's an interesting issue as well. The things I'm taking out of this, out of everyone, spoke already, is that it appears, and it's interesting, Steve, you said about, you know, it's tripled since 63. That's an amazing stat. And you're right. I mean, I suspect you're saying schools, they're not allowed to talk about.
Well, you can't. I mean, it's, you know, a separation of church and state.
So you can't do that.
You can't. I mean, after hours, clubs, yes. But in the classroom, discussing, no, it's just not allowed.
Okay, so that is a problem. It shuts off communication when kids may trust a teacher, and
exactly.
Then it puts them in a bad position. So it looks like, this is what I wrote down, maybe more resources. And let me talk about, at least identify these, and then we'll go around the table. Maybe there's not enough resources out there for kids to talk about, including the shutdown of the schools and not being able to talk to their teachers. The other thing I have is there could be other variables, too. I mean, since 63, wow, things have changed. I mean, the video games, the violence on video games. Are you kidding me? I don't do any of that stuff. The only thing I played in the 80s, I think, was, like, what was it called? Kong or ping pong?
Pac-Man.
Or yeah, I mean,
Pac-Man.
It didn't seem the morality issue is a good one. And the two-home income with the spouse, both parents may be working. One last thing, and Josh, I know you got something. I briefly, and I turned it off, there was a show on HBO, and I don't know if they're making a point. I did not like it, called Live. It's about a game show in which people play Russian roulette for $5 million. Is that promoting suicide? I shut that thing off right away because unless the director or the writer is trying to make a point about greed, okay, you could see it that way, but it was disgusting. It was all about the ratings. They emphasized that. Yep. And maybe the writer had a motive saying, look what this does. People will actually risk their lives for $5 million, and the networks would go for the ratings. Josh?
Well, I think that there's been several good points made here, and let me just touch on just a couple of them. Number one, I do think that we do go back to the morality issue, because I think that and looking at it just even from a strictly philosophical standpoint, not even taking into the fact that I'm a quote-unquote Jesus preacher, but looking at even from a philosophical standpoint, when you begin to shut down that a child can learn or that a child can believe or conversate within school that he was a created being or that there is a higher moral law, then what you have now is you have a kid that looks at his life as simply he is a developed cell that just happened to come along, and his life has no purpose, it has no value. And then these kids are going back. Now, we've talked about resources and being able to communicate with teachers, but I think back now, and it was a little bit tougher financially on my family. My dad worked two jobs at times to make sure that it happened, but we made sure that my mother stayed at home. Now, I realize society's changed. A lot of divorced parents, and I was lucky to grow up in a tight-knit family. However, when I came home, I had a mother that was there to nurture mm-hmm. me, and not just nurture me yeah. past the womb, but she nurtured me, and my mom had certain standards that were set because she cared about our mind. And the video games that these kids are playing, the movies that they're watching, and I really think it really comes back to the parents, because the parents are not guarding their minds. And now you've got these kids that are playing video games in which literally if you get caught by the cops or you're running away in this Grand Theft Auto, you can put a gun to your head and pop yourself so you're not a snitch.
Is that what in the video game?
Yes. This stuff is in video games.
Jeez. I had no idea.
Unbelievable.
And we don't think that translates?
Dr. Sharon, how do you take all these things that are going on?
You know, I totally agree with Josh. It completely translates. And he's right. So many of our parents do not guard what is going into the minds of the children and the adolescents. And that they are taking all of this in, and a lot of them have developed anxiety disorders or night terrors, sleep problems. And you say, well, you need to take away the video games or the movies, and they just look at you like, what? You know, of course, the kids aren't going to want to do it, and the parents even have trouble with it. But, you know, you have to get them to do it because they're feeding death into their mind.
So, Steve, video games, do you outlaw them? Do you ban them like some people want to ban, you know, at least certain military style guns? Or what do you do? I mean, how does that add up? What do you do with these video games?
Well, you know, I've got three children, 18, 22, and 23. And when they were younger, we absolutely monitored what they were watching, what they were doing. We had passwords to their email account. Facebook wasn't an issue back in the day. It wasn't even created yet. But there was something called MySpace, and we had the passwords for that. And, of course, as they've gotten older and they're adults, we believe that we've given them the insight and character traits to make decisions for themselves, good, bad, or indifferent. You know, that's how you learn and grow in life. But certainly when they were younger, we absolutely monitored. I mean, here's the deal. And Josh had mentioned this. Unfortunately, you know, my mom worked. And my dad, it was a dual income household. And can I say I suffered? I don't know if I suffered, but I believe I did miss something. So when I got married, I basically made a decision, and my wife and I had said, look, because we've been blessed to be able to have you stay home, we would like to do that. We made the choice together. And I believe the kids benefited, from that wholeheartedly. But yet, we can look at some of the greatest families that have done that, and yet tragedy happens. A good example is your friend, Dave.
Yeah.
You were at a funeral earlier today.
Absolutely.
So I think it's deeper. And again, you know, I'm not trying to go religious here, but I'm not going to apologize for being a Christian, to tell you the truth. And we are a Christian station. So I believe that evil has permeated America and the world. I believe it. And let's just look at what happened on Friday in Connecticut. We have that continuing to happen. We have more and more movies that are coming out, like paranormal stuff, evil, satanic, you know, music. Yeah, it's and I believe, I absolutely believe that this plays havoc on the minds, especially if you've got a young woman or a young man, teenager, that's already going through maybe some self-esteem issues. And literally, I believe that that road is a road that is a tempting road, because I'm going to say it. You know, I believe that the devil is alive and well. I happen to believe that. And, you know, putting science and medicine aside, I believe that is a huge problem. And I believe that Hollywood continues to capitalize on that. And I believe that many of the weak-minded continue to go down that road. It's an escape for whatever reason. That's what I believe. Am I right? Am I accurate? I don't know. But I believe wholeheartedly, again, if we go back into society 30 years ago, we didn't have these issues. But then we didn't have some of the very, very open and depraved things that we, unfortunately, many of us have become desensitized to today.
No, interesting point. And Dr. Sharon, is that, and what I'm hearing Steve say is, and Josh, is that if you have a good set of parents, or at least one parent that has morals and guards the minds of their kids growing up, how helpful is that?
Oh, it's awesome. It's amazingly helpful.
But how do you teach that? How do you? I guess you can't mandate that, but. But how do you get back to, like, the Leave It to Beaver days? You know, the father knows best. Remember the ideal stuff? And, I mean, those were good times. Well, I'm a little bit older than you guys, but I actually enjoyed the
I grew up watching that.
Oh, I was giving you a compliment that I'm the old man here. And but wasn't that good moral type of
absolutely
things?
Sure,
and
of course.
Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah,
totally fun. My favorite TV show.
But, Dave, look at mainstream media at that time. Look at what these kids were drinking in. Like, you know, just going back, and this is an old proverb, and it just simply says this: as a man thinketh, so is he.
That's
I
true.
Mean, every positive self-help guru will teach you that as somebody thinks, and what you drink in is what comes out, you know? So if you've got Leave It to Beaver and Hey Andy on, you know, you got
Opie Gomer Taylor.
Yeah, you got Gomer Pyle and Andy Griffith Show.
Love that show,
you're drinking it. Well, maybe the kids are still in bubblegum, but they're not committing suicide.
Right? I even like Donnie and Marie. Come on, give
Donnie
me a ring.
Sure.
I love them. Now, Dr. Sharon, maybe we could do some practical things where what should parents look for? Because we are talking about teen suicide. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of, sadly, families that are split up. They have a second set of families. Maybe they don't, but the parents aren't living together. They're divorced or whatever. What are parents missing? If you could sit down, let's say we're all three parents and we're your patients now, and you're going to have, or let's say we're at a lecture. What would you tell myself, Steve, and Josh right now as parents?
Okay. Parents need to look for their teen expressing a sense of helplessness over a situation or feeling worthless over a situation, or having recently lost a good friend, someone that was important to them, you know, could even be a grandparent or family member. Also, if they're engaging in any kind of self-mutilating behavior, like the cutting that I mentioned, and it's, that's especially true for girls. Teenage girls are the ones, primary ones that do that. Also, a history of eating disorders is very highly correlated with suicide in teenagers. And most teenagers who are going to make a suicide attempt will have a pattern of suicidal ideation. So if they say anything related to death or they're thinking about death or anything like that, that you have to take that extremely seriously. And it amazes me how I'll talk to parents about these things and they'll act like, oh, well, they didn't really mean it. They didn't really mean it. Everybody thinks about death. And it's like, you know, that they just don't see it. They don't see it. And also, especially for girls, demonstrating a distorted body image, which goes along with eating disorders and pattern of, you know, suicide attempts. So eventually, they'll, you know, if they keep going, they will do a completion.
What about, you know, teens? We all remember our teens and your first love, or these days it's probably 17 loves by age 14, right? It seems that that's like a big change, too, I think. But what about that is that how do you, you know, teaching your kids, you know, that to fill the void is not finding another person. That can never be the case. Is that something that would help, at least? Because I think, or let me ask, is that a big issue with teen suicide? You know, when you're going out, you get rejected. You did talk about rejection of peers, but rejection of a girlfriend, a boyfriend?
Boyfriend, absolutely. That can be, you know, a push you over the edge kind of a issue.
Now, did you guys ever have that? I remember my first, what I guess was a relationship, but at least it was dating. And this girl, well, I got rejected for some sailor. Yeah, actually a sailor. Can you believe it? I was probably 17. She was 16, and some sailor came in. But I never thought of suicide. I was not happy. Well, I was actually sad. But it went to my identity, and I learned a big lesson. Is like, hey, you know, that's not who I am. Someone that just goes out with someone, I have a grander, bigger purpose. But did you guys ever experience that?
Well, you know, when it came to girls, especially being young, I was rejected more times than Justin Bieber playing basketball with Shaquille O'Neal. Like, I mean, like, in fact, I do not even remember a girl really even liking me till I was probably 18 years of age because, and it wasn't just rejection, which going back to what Dr. Sharon was saying, and I mean, it's so powerful is, you know, really when you're dealing with someone that is at that point, a lot of times what you're dealing with is you're dealing with people that isolate themselves. And a lot of people I find isolate themselves and build up those walls is because particularly at one point in their life, they've built up walls to protect them from getting hurt. But eventually those walls that were built to protect them, those walls around their heart that were built to protect them, have now actually imprisoned them. So what at one point, see, because these kids anymore aren't just dealing with rejection from necessarily a boyfriend and girlfriend, but think of what even divorce would do to a young kid who is in, a very viable, vital part of his or her upbringing, and they're looking at that, and they're not able to differentiate that this is a problem between mom and dad, but now a lot of times they see themselves, and a lot of parents during the divorce will use the child as both a weapon and a shield, and a lot of times this is so unfair to these kids because they're already going through something that is so emotionally traumatic, and if there is somebody out there that's listening right now that's going through a divorce, if I could just encourage you, most of the young kids that I have had to deal with, or people that have even grown up over a period of a time, I go back a lot of times, and a lot of the root issues took place but in their identity crisis when their parents were splitting up, or parents were fighting, and it was just too much for that kid to bear, you know?
And that is another risk factor for suicide in adolescence, having a divorce of their parents.
Oh, wow. So that's big. So maybe a death of a parent, divorce of a parent, and perhaps being rejected. I think that peer pressure, Steve, is huge. I'm not sure I totally reacted in a helpless, hopeless way with peer pressure, but so many people do. They want to conform, and if they can't, they're lost.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, you know, absentee fathers, you know, even though you may not be divorced, you may not be all there in your household,
right?
Because
your
job or whatever you're involved in may take your time away. And if we look back, again, statistically, many young girls need their father. Men need to man up. and stop being sissified.
Yeah.
And I believe society, even the church, has sissified and feminized men. Well, I believe that wholeheartedly. And I believe that men need to be men. They need to step up. They need to lead their families. They need to lead their households. They need to invest in their children, invest in their daughters, invest in their sons. And I believe if they did that and put away their selfish gain in terms of the promotion, the careers, the luxuries, and literally took serious their family, I believe we'd see a lot of that subside. I really believe that.
I totally agree. That's a really a great point. Let's take a quick break right now. We're only going to have this one break this whole hour. This is too important not to capitalize on all the time. But when we come back, I want to talk about what I think may be the biggest and most important thing to talk about is purpose and meaning for life. And sort of a sense of becoming a goal of being selfless versus selfish, and we'll be right back.
Are you standing at a crossroad in life wondering what's next? Is it time to reinvent your relationship, your career, your life? Whether you're ready for a reinvention revolution or a reinvention evolution, the support of a couple of great coaches can get you there. When you decide it's time to take your life from just functional to optimal, call Joe and Lori Battaglia of Living the Dream Coaches. 888-505-5762. That's 888-505-5762, or go online to www.livingthedreamcoaches.com. That's www.livingthedreamcoaches.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Hopefully, you'll never have to experience a disaster such as a fire or a flood striking your home or business. But if you do, know there's someone out there who can quickly help you get life back to normal. That someone is ServiceMaster by Disaster Professionals. Just call 602-431-2222, and our professionals will be there to lend a hand. You can be confident knowing ServiceMaster Clean has over 50 years of experience restoring damaged homes and businesses after frightening events such as fires, floods, vandalisms, and other disasters. We can offer services such as emergency cleaning, smoke, soot, and odor removal, in addition to water and fire damage repair. Our solid reputation is the reason insurance companies nationwide know ServiceMaster Clean will get the job done quickly and professionally. Plus, we guarantee to do the work right the first time, or we'll do it over with no questions asked. That's ServiceMaster Clean. We're the company that's first to respond to your call, first to arrive on the scene, and first to guarantee relief. Because delays and hassles are the last thing you need. Remember, 602-431-2222 for ServiceMaster Clean by Disaster Professionals. And get the clean you expect and the service you deserve.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And, of course, our special event today and topic is teen suicide, a really important topic. You parents out there, uncles, aunts, brothers, sisters, whoever, friends of people that you know have kids, very important to listen in today. And, of course, we have Dr. Sharon Van Lentz in studio great psychologist, as well as we have Josh Feuerstein, TV evangelist, and his own radio show coming January 7th, 5:15 to 5:45 every day here on 1010 AM. I'm looking forward to that, Josh.
I cannot wait. It's going to be exciting.
Such a great voice. I can't believe he's a natural radio guy. And, of course, my friend Steve Sanchez, national syndicated talk show radio host. And why don't you give a little plug for yourself?
Well, you know, I appreciate that. I never like to do that unless
permission.
Catch me Saturdays, 7 a.m. To 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, thestevesanchezshow.com. You can listen on demand and follow me on Twitter at Real Raw Talk.
Excellent. And big topic today. And as promised, when we came back from our break right now, we want to talk about how we think, things that can help. And I think people with a purpose, if you have a reason for being, you find your gifts and your talents, why you're here on earth. And I firmly believe it's not to gather toys. It's to give, give, and give more, to be of service. And whatever that talent is, I mean, it could be anything, but as long as you get out of your own way to help someone else, I think that's the key. Dr. Sharon.
Absolutely. Learning your gifts and your talents, your abilities, having meaningful relationships, that is very protective against suicide. Having people you can talk to, people you can trust, people that understand you, teachers, friends, parents, and extended family.
And so what this means, Josh, is that it's so important for your show, Steve's show, Dr. Sharon's show, my show, to emphasize this to parents, to teach your kids, what does it mean to develop, to evolve, to transform, to have that number one value as to be able to serve others, Josh?
Well, I would 100% have to concur with both you and Dr. Sharon on this, in that, you know, even going back to Scripture, you know, the Bible relates that a man has his kids like a quiver of arrows. And going back to what that was really talking about is, it's talking about a father that knows, a father or a mother, that knows how to give their child a direction and how to give them a purpose. If you look at someone like Michael Phelps or these gymnasts or any of these people that accomplish these tremendous things, and we look and say, wow, what a great example of a kid that's doing something. Well, at a young age, I promise you, every one of their stories started with a parent or with a coach or a big brother, big sister program or something, in which they're being pointed in a direction, they're given a purpose, and then when they go in that, now, as long as you've got a purpose, then you have a value, and as long as you have a value, then you're not as quick to go to the drastic place in taking your life. And you see all of these athletes, I mean, they'll perform at such a high level because they're driven, they have purpose. But then maybe you take a guy like Junior Seau and the tragedy that happened this last year. Here is a guy that, after his purpose was accomplished, now he's having an identity crisis, just like these young people are, because now he's at a point, like so many of them, to where he's like, wow, what's my identity, what's my purpose now? And then he gets to that point of despair and tragedy, you know?
You know, it's interesting that you said you have a purpose, and then it really is like a value. And Steve, if you think about it, a purpose, a mission in life, giving your gifts and talents, serving, creates this value. It is a value. But it also, to me, seems like it creates boundaries, too. If you know your purpose and you know your mission and you have these values, you're not going to succumb to the peer pressure as much as someone that's lost.
No, that's absolutely correct. And I believe, again, dads play such a pivotal role, because I believe there is something called a father's blessing that children have to have. If we go back into the Bible, even to Jewish customs, why was the blessing so important? I mean, think about it. When we go back to the Old Testament in the Bible, and, you know, Jacob stole that blessing from Esau, from Isaac.
Mm-hmm.
Why was that blessing? I mean, and when Esau found that out, he's saying, hey, Dad, don't I get that blessing? No, I already gave the blessing. A father's blessing is imperative. Now, I understand sometimes there's dads that don't care. They're absent. They've bailed. But, you know, programs like Big Brother, Big Sister, I encourage single moms right now, divorced moms right now, that basically dad's not in the picture. You know, if you have a brother or an uncle to literally play a key role in your child's life, that's huge. Or go to Big Brother, Big Sister, because there is nothing like having a father's blessing in one's life. When our kids were younger, we did a father's blessing ceremony. It was called a Bat Baraka, and it was a Christian blessing ceremony. And when our girls were 16, we did it like a wedding, like a formal. And we literally, I stood up in front of friends and family, and I imparted a blessing into my daughters. I put a ring on their finger and basically stated that this ring will be replaced someday by your future spouse. And until then, I'm your covering. I'm your support. I'm who you come to. And I'll seek God, and then God will give me the wisdom to help you. So it's investing. You know, we invest in the stock market to get a return. If we invest in our children and our families, we'll get a return. We'll get dividends for years to come, because we're going to have a healthy legacy. Our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren will prosper because we invested. And that's the key. We need to invest. In fact, you know, speaking about Proverbs, there's a proverb that basically says a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. Inheritance just doesn't mean money. It means values. Yeah. It means character. It means righteousness. These things that are so missing today in society.
Totally agree. Well said. I like that thing with the ring, though.
It was great, and they still wear it to this day.
Cool.
And that's everything to them.
Steve lives it, too. If I can just take a minute to brag on a friend.
Yeah.
Like, I think more dads need to grow some hair on their chest and step up like this man has. Now, obviously, I'm single, don't have a kid, but the one thing that I've watched, just being close to Steve over the last year, is I've watched him. I mean, he will drop anything for his daughter. Like, his daughters understand, like, you know, Steve is a wealthy man. He has a lot of stuff going on, radio programs, financial businesses, et cetera, et cetera. And they look at their dad as having worth. They look at him as having value, as any kid would, even if, you know, maybe you're a father listening and you barely bring home a paycheck. Your daughter looks at you like you are a king. They have no
point.
And when daddy will drop everything for them at a moment's notice to deal with a hurt in their life, you know what? I give credit to fathers and to mothers like that, that are willing to give their kids that value, that you are more important than anything that I have going on.
That's right. Thanks, Josh. I appreciate that.
Yeah, nicely said and well deserved, Steve, of course. And let me just give the call-in number in case you're curious about something, you want to talk to any one of us, and we have the doctor in the house, Dr. Sharon Van Lentz. 602-296-3632, 602-296-3632. And Dr. Sharon, what do you tell parents? I mean, here you have, you know, if let's say some teenagers really having struggles. Do you also see the parents? Because maybe the parents are just oblivious to this, and is there any teaching, any coaching you do?
Sure, you have to see the parents when you're dealing with an adolescent. There's no way around it. Most of the adolescents that I have coming in, they all have single parents.
Is that right?
You know, just have a mother. So I think that doubly ensures or trumps what they just said about, you know, the covering of the father. It's critical, and they have no father in their life for the most part.
Wow. So that makes it really difficult. Now, what would you think, and I'll open this up to everyone, like wellness checks, like with you, Dr. Sharon.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if let's say you just don't have the awareness to really understand, you're not paying attention, or you think you are, but you're not sure, isn't your kids worth it to at least come in when you don't think anything is wrong, and just to come in to talk to you? I mean, to me, that makes like total sense. Why don't people do that?
Yeah.
So
makes sense.
Yeah, talk about that a little.
Well, it totally makes sense. I have a few forward-thinking parents that do come in for just, you know, checkups on this or that, and it's few and far between, but it's a very good idea, because a lot of times they really are out of touch with what's going on in their child or their teenager's life. And so to have another, you know, like have a professional, you know, spend time with their child is very useful, because they really don't know their deepest, darkest secrets. And if they can tell those to someone else, then you can really find out whether there's anything to be concerned about. Although actually the parents can't find out, because there's confidentiality, unless, you know, the child or adolescent is suicidal or is a significant risk to themselves or someone else, you can't actually tell them what's going on.
You mean tell the parents?
Can't tell the parent, yeah. Otherwise, there would be no trust in the relationship with the child.
Wow.
So a lot of parents don't realize that, and they bring their, you know, child or adolescent in for therapy, and then they start emailing you and want to know, you know, what did Johnny say while he was there, you know, and you have to tell them that in the first session, that there is confidentiality, and the only time that they can know is if the child is at significant risk to themselves or someone else.
So you tell them, well, we can't tell you, however, we expect you in therapy immediately.
Well, you can right? say, you know, they're doing well or they're doing better or they're, you know, but unless the child says, okay, you can tell my mom X, Y, and Z, then you can't say
anything.
That's
interesting. That yeah. is, now, do you ever, does that put you in a dilemma, though? You know something maybe sort of bad, and they don't want to.
Sure it does. I mean, it makes you uncomfortable at times. You know,
yeah.
someone's using drugs, you know. Unless they're, you know, life-threatening, you can't do anything about it. Someone's, you know, having sex and could get pregnant, you know, unless there's, you know, that is not even, you know, in my opinion, a situation. I don't make the rules. I just follow them. But, you know, they have to be a significant risk to themselves, you know, in terms of self-harm or to someone else.
Wow. So that puts a lot of pressure on you. Josh?
Yeah.
You know, one thing that I think is important to see here is that, you know, a lot of times it's not so much the kids as that even need the counseling. it's usually more the parents from things that I found.
Is it? That's true.
And, you know, even if you go, and I would never want to make the parallel because I would never want anyone to think that I would consider these two lives on the same level. But a lot of times, I'll just put it this way. I kind of wish that they had a show called The Human Whisperer. You know,
yeah.
because
yeah.
the one thing about the dog whisperer is he'll go in, and the one thing that he will always point out, you know, in his real cool, you know, I just want you to know, okay, that that it's more your fault, you know, and a lot of the times he's right. They just don't know how to handle that particular dog, that particular breed. And a lot of times when he goes in there, which is why I'm so thankful for professionals and people that have studied this, especially coming from our background, especially people that have the God factor there that can help instill this in kids. But a lot of times to really correct the situation long term, you don't need to so much deal with the kid as much as you fix the issue there going back, but you've got to help the parents going forward.
And how do you, Steve, if you could. If you're president of the United States, could you mandate something like that? Every parent needs some type of therapy before they're a parent. Or is that against the Constitution?
Well, you know, it's
a great idea.
Look,
I just don't know how you do it.
Presidents past have used executive order in areas I don't agree. So I think this would be.
I'm saying if you're the president.
I would absolutely.
How would you do that?
I would use my executive order and only. And here's even further. And Dr. Sharon said this, and I can see because her hands are tied because it is the law.
Yeah.
To me, I don't think it's a benefit when your children literally can go to a professional mm-hmm. and speak a secret and then the parent doesn't get to know. I don't like that law. I would change that law. That's why I would never become president, because if anybody ever heard the truth, they wouldn't want me as president. But because I'm going to tell you this, fundamentally, parents' rights are not being looked at anymore. Planned Parenthood can give girls birth control. Abortions could be done. I don't like it. Parents is parents, good parents, their rights are being stripped. I don't like it, number one, and I think it's a big problem. When you have society, and we circle back to TV, we've got sitcoms now that make dads look like a giant bozo. He blows up the barbecue, he drives into the garage, he doesn't know how to make decisions without his wife making the decisions. Well, guess what? That's not the way it's supposed to be. You don't have healthy family units anymore on TV, and hey, kids are going to watch TV. It's become the babysitter today for most families. And when you see that, kids are visual. That's what they see. That's the norm to them. And no one's teaching them anything different.
Let me ask you this, Dr. Sharon, because it's interesting about this law. But and I heard you say, though, however, building trust with the kid is also important. That's not necessarily the law, but that's the reality.
That's the critical.
How do you balance the two? Because, Steve, I understand exactly what you're saying. But where does it, is trust has to be important, right?
Well, yeah, it has to be important. And kids coming in, you know, teenagers coming in, are, it's going to take them a while to trust you in the first place. And let's say they tell you they're smoking marijuana. You know, if you turn around and tell their parents, that parent is not going to be able to keep their mouth closed, you know, just because they know about it. They're going to say something, and then the kid's going to not want to come in and talk to you anymore. He may come and just sit in your office and sit there for an hour and not say a word, because if you're going to just turn around and tell everything to their parents, there's no reason for them. There's no relationship there.
Boy, that puts – you have a hard job. That's all I could say.
Yeah,
that's got to be so difficult. And and I see what you're saying, though, and mm-hmm. that's so important. I guess it goes back to the highest level, you know, is how do we get parents on track to know themselves, to get their own garbage out of the way? Because people, you know, two people meet, they bring their own garbage in, and you're a marriage counselor too, right? You do.
Yeah.
You probably, there's some starting point there. And I always said, and we've talked about it, I think, you know, you get a license to drive, you get a license to a CPA like myself.
You get a license to be a parent.
Yeah, but you don't get a license to get married, mm-hmm. and it's a crying shame out there, but and you don't get a license to be a parent. Josh, should there be licenses?
Let's look at it this way. You're talking about how do we get the parents to get rid of their junk? Well,
yeah.
The issue is today is just like Steve was talking about. You've got all of these people that really don't stand in the way of these kids having sex, and by virtue of them having sex, them having babies. And so what you have is you have kids who are not like 15 years old back in the old Western days. These kids were a lot more mature, and now we've got 15, 16 year olds. And in fact, I personally know 25 year old kids today that are still little immature kids. And what we have is a bunch of kids that are having kids, and they don't know how to raise kids, so they end up going to grandma. And I've got a mother and father who are grandparents, and they're a lot more lenient with their grandchildren than they are their children.
Yeah.
So now what you've got is you 16, 17 year old kids that have no clue even how to parent.
Yeah.
And we're just giving them a baby, and by virtue of them having baby, and one last quick point, going back to what he was talking about, you know, as far as value, you know, the whole issue of abortion, and I know that it's, you know, it's not the topic of the show today, but start thinking about what we're telling these kids when we're purporting abortion and we're promoting it. And, you know, basically what we're telling them is human life has no value.
That's actually a good point, and it's by default the parents should get an upgrade. We upgrade our computers to 7.0,
really.
But not our own heart, our soul, and our brains. Dr. Sharon, we only have a few minutes left. Resources. Let's go around then. If you know some resources, people listening right now, take note of this, because if you're not sure, if you're too shy to call in, there is help out there, right?
Absolutely. There's a lot of therapists out there, and I think that the important things that even parents can do, or once they get into therapy, is assist the teenagers in enhancing their self-image, encouraging them to journal their feelings, draw out their feelings. I have a feeling wheel with like 50 different feelings on it that they can color and things like that when they, you know, when they get angry and those kinds of things. That especially helps adolescent girls not cut on themselves, help validate any self-esteem that you can, any accomplishments that they, you know, good grades, any of those things. Teach them to verbalize their emotions, you know, not only to, you know, their parents, but their friends and other family members, and just learning how to deal with their emotions. And then I think any outside groups, like he mentioned, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, and then, you know, after school activities like sports and gymnastics and things like that are really self-esteem building for teenagers.
So if people want to talk to you, teens or whoever the case might be, mm-hmm. how do they get in touch with you?
Call me at 602-334-3776, 602-334-3776, or send me an email to drshaaron123@gmail.com.
And Josh Fairstein, thank you. And how do they get in touch with you?
Well, they can either find us on our Acts 29 website. I would definitely encourage that they check Acts 29, that's AX29, out on Facebook, because every Sunday night, 6 p.m., we do a service. Break dancers, all that stuff. Kids come, they love it, and then we give them the truth.
Excellent. Steve Sanchez, thank you. And how do they get in touch with you?
SteveSanchezShow.com, and send me your email.
This has been a blessing. I really appreciate each one of you. Steve Sanchez, syndicated talk radio show host every Saturday, 7 to 9 here, KXXT 1010. Josh Fairstein, you're going to have a show starting January 7th and from 5:15 to 5:45. Dr. Sharon, every third Tuesday, 2 to 3. Really take this seriously. This is a huge topic. We're going to do this again. I think it's that important.
I agree.
And thank you so much for listening. Thank you to the panel. You all are amazing human beings. And we'll see you tomorrow.